Welcome to a new episode of the Activism Academy podcast with your dear host, Ella Grishi, and me, Miriam Fanin. I am a researcher in far-right extremism at Khalifa Leader Institute. On today's episode, we have our first ever in-studio guest, Agata Borghesan, aka Solitude Skinny Scars. Agata is an Italian alternative model and performer, and she moved to Norway about a year ago. Today, she will discuss with us the issues of conscious and responsible use of social media, both as a user and a creator. Welcome, Agata, to the Activism Academy podcast, your first ever in-studio guest. So, you can start by introducing yourself and your work.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Agata Borghesan. I'm 27 years old, and I come from a small city in northern Italy called Mantova. I'm in Norway now. And I'm a visual artist and model who started to use social media as primary sources of self-promotion a few years ago.
So, what motivated you to start doing what you do? And why did you choose Instagram precisely as a platform to express yourself?
I started to use social medias when I was around 13. In the same period, well, I started to cut myself. I was feeling really bad and I was too scared to talk about it or ask for help at the beginning. So I used the net as a research source and a way to find somewhere, somebody whom I could relate to. It was very difficult though, and I felt very alone in my mental health issues. I remember how much I felt the pressure both offline and online because I couldn't find many points of reference. And even people from the other side of the world would judge me. During and especially at a good point of my healing process, which was nothing more than basically finally accept who I was and who I am, what I did and its consequences on the present, using art as the main tool of expression, I started to use Instagram. Instagram because, you know, visual content is the main thing on Instagram and it fits very well for visual artists. So at the beginning I used Facebook, but when I found Instagram, I thought it was a little more appropriate for what I was doing. So that's basically why. And I remember that at the beginning, Instagram was honest in its post. It was like Insta pictures. Also the style of the social network was more like I'm taking, you know, Insta pictures of my life, of what I'm doing, of my work, and share it. So it was very close to what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I remember also when I first started using Instagram, the people were using all sorts of weird filters, weird lights. Everything looked super like non-realistic in a sense, but it was also very realistic because you had like a person posting a picture of their cocktail and the cocktail was like, I don't know, originally it was red, but they put so many filters and weird lights on it. So it was really odd at the beginning.
Yeah, it was, but it was also interesting because it was different from the other social medias. I think it was really like a way of how people were perceiving their moments and share them. So I really liked that. But of course, it changed a lot in the years. And now it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yes. As someone who used Instagram in its beginnings, I understand what you're talking about, and I want to ask you, so what are these changes that happened and what do you think of them?
Well, you know, at the beginning there was no this thing of influencers, and this is a quite recent thing. It was more like a new way of blogging, and it was a way to show the new trends together with, it was the normal people sharing their best moments and sharing their trends. And then bloggers who were already famous or who were already blogging for years, they started to use Instagram to share their content. So at the beginning, it was a little bit more like that. Then it started to be more like a commercial thing and a way of creating trends instead of sharing them. So it changes a lot in this sense. And that's where I found myself even more engaged, because I was completely against these trends in a way. And I was feeling that a new world was starting in there. It was not only virtual anymore. It became something real. And now it is something real. It's not something, you know, that people use only once in a while. We use Instagram every day. We use it for looking for inspirations. We use it for comparing ourselves. We use it for examples that we want to follow. So it's real. It's not virtual anymore. And I think that's the main thing now. Like, from something that was like Facebook at the beginning, it was a way to share opinions, to see what others were doing. It became more like a guideline for some people also. So people who were creating guidelines for others and people who were following these guidelines in a way. So that's the main thing. And it became so real that we are using also hashtags in our real life. Like, we go to a restaurant, you know, and we find hashtags on the menu, for example. That's pretty rare if you think about it. Like, if we think about this, how it was a few years ago, it was, oh, you have Instagram. Oh, yes, I use it. Now it's like, you don't use Instagram. It's weird when people don't use it, right? So it's a daily life thing. And that's the main thing. Instagram changed it and continues to change in a way that, I have to be honest, scares me a little bit. I wanted at the beginning to use the simplicity of the structure of Instagram to be able to talk about exactly what not popular. So to do the opposite. People were talking about what was popular, and I wanted to use the same structure to say the contrary, to fight against the mass thoughts, right? And to be able to have like a new audience for something that I felt I couldn't find. So it was time maybe to create it. I could only see happy people on Instagram. I could only see smiling, beautiful people, beautiful places, and happy moments. And I was like, since this is starting to become so real, I feel that there's something wrong here. Because if it was just a way to share moments, then it was different. But now it's like all my life is like this. Everything that I do is on Instagram. And how can it be possible that everything that you do in your life is beautiful and perfect, right? So yeah. There's something really wrong in that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to start to use Instagram even more to show something that nobody really wants to see, but I know that there's people who need to see this, because I was feeling like this. I was feeling that there was something that was not shown and nobody really dared to do it. So I was like, I'm gonna try to share unpopular things and see what happens.
Yeah, so from a user perspective, in a sense, you have this feeling that when you see all the time perfect lives on Instagram, then you look at your own life and you're like, but my life doesn't look any like this. So my life is basically a complete and total failure, because I'm not spending like my summer on a yacht. I don't have new clothes every day. So my life kind of sucks because of what I see online. But what I see online is like, it's not existing in real life, because the people that do this stuff, they are actually like, most times they are paid to do that stuff. It's their actual job to have this kind of life. And that creates like this kind of cognitive dissonance in a sense.
Yeah.
And you also have like, from an artist perspective, from a content creator perspective, you have a duality. So you have the people that are actively advertising this false stuff, And then you have other people that are trying to combat the trend of false stuff by showing like what a real life is like what real bodies are like, what real life experience, like how we are traveling on this like star in the middle of nothing, rotating around the red star. And yeah, this is our common experience of life. But basically, we are talking about a conscious use of social media. So what do you think about a conscious use of social media, and how can an average user be more aware, especially in regard of the impact that content has on people, the actual real life impact on online stuff?
Yeah, that was, I was about actually to say that, so you anticipated me. Like, the more I could see superficial popularity and trends grow and the real effect on people around me, meaning I had people around me in real life who changed based on these trends, yeah, based on these things. So it was like, I was really encouraged to use it to fight against this. And as you said, Instagram recently, fortunately, started to become also a window for good activism and created as a positive side effect way, a space for battling against what is most popular. So, it's happening, and as you said, there's a lot of people who realize that and try to use Instagram in a way that is conscious, mm-hmm, and being aware of what they do is not only just like a 2-second post. It has influence, even though we're not influencers, like properly paid and everything. Whatever we post can have an influence on, yeah, others, because we don't know how many people see what we're doing. So first of all, I think it's important to remember that whatever we publish on the internet has a wide range of visibility. It's very, very simple to post something online. It takes just a few seconds for a picture and maybe a few minutes to write a text. But when it's published, it's out there. When you show the same image in a cinema, would you do that, for example? Would you say the same things on a speech in front of thousands of people? I ask myself these questions every time that I post something, because it's basically the same. Nowadays, everybody of any age, culture, and background is using social media. So the public of people seeing directly or indirectly what one does online is immense, because we have, of course, private profile, but what do you know, you're a friend with somebody or you're following somebody and then you're showing it to friends and then mm-hmm. they're taking screenshots. So yeah, when it's there, even though you're using every kind of privacy settings, it's not real in a way. And we need to be aware of that. We need to be aware that when it's out there, it's out there. Even mm-hmm. though we think that we cancel it, we can delete it, it's not really true, or it's true, but it already had a large effect before it was actually canceled. So I think that's the first thing to be aware of. Like, would you really use the same image as a poster in your home, or would you say those things in front of all your friends or in front of strangers? If the answer is yes, then you're posting something that you're not going to regret, and yeah, that's great. And a second thing is, what kind of reactions could my post create? So mm-hmm. It's very easy in a way to think about not so dangerous consequences when you're posting like a picture of your body, maybe. But then you need to realize what is the context in which people are seeing this picture, because maybe I'm posting this picture from my home and like in a very happy and normal environment, and there's a person on the other side of the world who's seen it and has, I don't know, mental health issues, who has body awareness issues, and a simple picture in a different context can create different consequences. So it's very important to triple think what we post. Yeah, I think definitely. That's the first step. And then, of course, hashtags. So yeah. we are categorizing what we're posting, right?
Yeah.
It became more and more difficult lately. I've recently, not so recently actually, it's months that I'm ghost banned because I'm using hashtags as scars are beautiful or scars mm-hmm. are sexy, for example, mm-hmm. you know. And these hashtags are considered as triggering. And I'm like, what? what is triggering in that? Like, I'm using words that are basically encouraging to accept yourself, but they're banned. So, but if I post like booty, peach, or this kind of thing, it's not banned. So I'm like, okay, what's the problem here? Yeah. I know that there's a lot of people like using wrong hashtags in a way to have mm-hmm. more visibility. That's very popular on Instagram. Like people posting, I don't know, their selfie and then they write, I don't know, Miami Beach, even though they are home, you know, mm-hmm. just to have it more popular. And that's part of the insane fake process of Instagram, right? And even though I'm ghost banned, and even though I know that using like certain types of hashtags, I'm gonna be pushed a little bit in the corner, I really trust in the honesty that we can create on Instagram. So yeah. I'm gonna continue to do what mm-hmm. I'm doing. I don't know if my profile will be canceled one day because they already told me several times.
Yeah. No, that's also my main issue actually with Facebook, that is also the owner of Instagram, is the fact that they have like this set of terms and conditions that for like up to a certain extent, they have developed these terms and conditions together with like governments and interest organization in order to comply to legislation. But then I wonder, do they look at the actual impact of the things they write? Like, because people never read terms and conditions, they click accept. And then when you go reading them and you think about the actual impact of what is written there, many times it ends up being straight up censorship. And it's like, it is a legal censorship because you have accepted the terms and conditions and people have literally no awareness of what they are accepting. Because first of all, it's too long to read. Second of all, it's too technical to understand, to be understood. So people just like, yeah, okay. And then they find their profiles to be like reported or their like the things to go down. But at the same time, Facebook is using these terms and conditions to actively like hunt after certain things. So we can take a recent example of like the Norwegian Holocaust Research Center that has whose private profile, like the private profile of researchers from the Holocaust Center has been banned from Facebook because they were posting like what was flagged as incitement to violence, basically, because the algorithm is obnoxious. Like the algorithm doesn't manage to understand between like actual use of like promoting violence and research. So we can also take this one into like the research example into a broader thing. Like, we have, for example, black women that get plus size black women that get banned. We have other example of, for example, female nipples censored, male nipples not censored. The shape, the color is exactly the same. Why on one is not okay, but the other one stays? So basically, it becomes a form of censorship. So what do you think about it?
Yeah, I totally know what you're talking about, because that's in my case, it's basically the same. So I'm doing a work of awareness and my posts are being removed or are being censored because I talk about this kind of thing. So it's basically not just what is censored because it's considered violence, it's considered racism, it's also censored in its opposite way, like awareness and incitement of not, you know, be racist, not be judgmental is also censored because, as you said, scars as a hashtag or black women as hashtag can be seen both in a triggering way or in a positive way, in a way, and for not having responsibility, they just basically cancel everything or they just report everything. So it's really the consequence of this is that what is accepted socially already continues to grow, and what is not accepted continues to be banned, continues to be taboo, because we don't really have the possibility to talk about it. So talking about this being banned just because the topic is being banned. So it's really a matter of taboos. It's really a matter of popularity at the end. At the end, it's really difficult to fight against it, even though it's allowed. So it's tricky. It's very tricky and it's really complicated. And I've been studied social media marketing and this kind of things in the past years, and but it's so difficult to keep track on what is changing, how it's changing, and how the interactions are changing. Like, for example, now it's crazy, but I have like 10,000 followers and I have a visibility of like 1,000 people on my post. So it's crazy. It's like, why do I have this 10,000 people following me for? If they're not able to actually see what I'm doing, right?
Yeah.
So I put a lot of effort because, of course, I'm an in a way an artist activist myself. So I'm actively trying to reach my followers. It's not that I promote, you know, my things online and then I don't gain any money in doing that. I don't care. It's a matter of sharing a message and sharing free art. So I'm actively looking after my followers. I talk to them and all these kind of things. And a lot of people is telling me, but, oh, I didn't see your last 10 posts. What happened? And like, I'm ghost banned. And it's, 5-6 months that I'm ghost banned. And I see people like posting boobs pictures and it's totally fine.
Yeah.
And then I start to be a little bit angry because it's like, what is really happening here? Why do we use Instagram as potentially free way of speech, and then it's completely false. But again, this is another reason to continue to do it and to fight against it, right? So,
yeah.
The problem is also that a lot of the things are decontextualized because, for example, on your profile, when I go through your posts and you're talking about what happened to you, the things that you feel, the scars, and you use the hashtag scars are sexy, I know that you are talking from a place of vulnerability, a place from compassion and caring for others that you are sharing your story. So that dehumanization of Instagram kind of replaced by algorithms that decide what people are saying, what people are feeling, to me that is just perverse, because at some point, okay, if your profile is flagged too much, maybe a human should be looking at it at that point and see what is this person talking about. And this is something a robot will never ever be able to master more than a human mind. But also, for example, all the beauty standards that are promoted, that, okay, we are all beautiful, white, black, skinny, obese, slim, but we are always focusing on the beauty standards that are already upheld, like you said. And it was fascinating in the last month, I think, in the last year, there was like a small campaign. I say small because it wasn't really advertised a lot. I just came across it to warn Instagram about the unfairness of censoring plus size black woman. And Instagram actually changed the algorithm And so this is the thing that where I say, okay, your work, you're doing it in the shadows and you're doing it one post after the other. But in the end, people like you have the power to change things if you rally more people to your cause. So do you see that this destigmatization that happened to the pictures of plus size Black women could also happen to pictures featuring scars and self-harm?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I already have a lot of people like, and it makes me really, really happy and satisfied with what I'm doing. And that's the reason why I'm continuing to do it. Like, I receive every day a lot of messages of girls, guys from, you know, any age, just looking at me and my posts and like, I really do appreciate what you're doing. You know, I really do appreciate to show yourself for who you really are. And I remember I did this experiment once, like I was sending, like in a story, I was asking for volunteers to send me some pictures of their scars because I wanted to make a video out of it. Of course, with their consent and everything, and if they wanted to be anonymous and whatever it took. And I didn't have that many people sending me, but I had few. And it's a really big thing, you know, because showing your scars, especially if it's not in your process already, it's deep, it's difficult, it's scary. But I got, I think, 5 or 6 people who actually sent me their pictures. And I was able to create this video, which I called The Scars Are Not a Shame. So it was a little bit, you know, a message to Instagram, because I did it on purpose for Instagram. You know, like, scars are not a shame. We can show them and we don't have to be ashamed of that. And so I know already, in a way, what you're talking about, because just trying with the simple thing, I already got responses. So I think we have a great power on Instagram, even though it's difficult, every important fight is difficult, right? But I think there is the possibility to do a big change also as it concerns mental health awareness, because in the last years, I've been seeing amazing campaigns, as you said, on Instagram against like racism, against some body idealized fake, you know, models and all these kind of things. Mental health awareness, it's still a thing, a work in process, I think, maybe because it's still a very taboo topic all over the world, and it's very difficult for people to show their experiences, and we're not really having a lot of platforms where to talk about it. Like, I'm here in Norway now, and I see that it's a little bit better compared to Italy, for example. I can see that it's that the environment here, it's a little less judgmental, but maybe because also, like, there's a story of mental health issues in Norway that is more, I wouldn't say bigger, but it's more socially known in a way. Maybe it's because it's connected, you know, to the weather and the kind of environment that it's here, the darkness and so on. So I can see a little bit more of opportunities here, but it is accepted, but not really actively accepted. Mm-hmm. So everybody's actually accepting it, but not doing anything to prevent it, not doing anything to destigmatize it. So it's a difficult topic. It's I think we're just at the beginning now, and I've collaborated already with some artists online who are talking about this, who are sharing this, but it's a long process. But we're gonna be able to do something. We have a very, very big opportunity on Instagram and on social medias and on whatever that is online. So we really need to use it. I'm talking about artists. I'm talking about like normal people wanting to share their experiences. It's important that we take the step to actually do it. Don't be ashamed. Don't think that is something wrong, that people wouldn't know what you're talking about, because there are people out there who know how you feel. That's my main message, and that's why I share in such details my experience, because I know that people can connect to it, this happened to me as well, but this person is talking about this and I don't see any bad response, so maybe I can do it as well, you know, just give an example of it's not that dangerous.
Yeah, I guess Norway is also in a sense a more open society than Italy, for example, because they take into consideration as society things that in Italy we'll probably start taking into consideration like in 20 years or so. Yeah. In a sense, so like for example, Norway has introduced a new law that requires influencers online to label retouched photos on social media in order to address body pressure in society. That's the actual quote from the law. The purpose is to address body pressure in society, and the aim is to tackle mental health struggle among youth. Because, for example, the third cause of death among young women in Norway is actually anorexia. So what the government is trying to do is trying to like take into consideration the actual real life impact of what is seen online. So what do you think about this new law and of the reactions you have seen about this new law?
Oh, I was really glad when I read this new, because it's something that needed to be done, because it cannot be ignored what the social medias, as you said, actually do in real life. Mm. The consequences that social medias have nowadays in real life. I've seen myself, again, people struggling and getting even worse with their self-awareness, self-confidence after seeing Instagram posts or YouTube videos or this kind of thing, and I'm really, really glad that this happened, because at least they have a point of reference, and at least people who are looking at posts know if they this is retouched, so this is not real.
Yeah,
and that was the main issues, because I compare myself to something that I can never reach. Mm. And this creates a sense of impossibility and a sense of perfection, a sense of I'm never going to do it. I'm never going to be that good. I'm never going to be that beautiful. And I'm really happy that finally somebody is actually saying, hey, this is not real. This is just it's basically self-advertisement, right? This is how some people promote themselves, but it's like advertisement on TV when we see, I don't know, colors in food that are not exactly like they really are.
Yeah.
There is a law, you know, this is just
advertisement.
Yeah. So it's basically the same thing, because thing, because people is selling their image. So it's very important, especially as it concerns if they're earning money out of it.
Yeah.
It's really important that they say, this is just a marketing thing, or this is just, experimental thing with Photoshop or whatever it is. So people can actually, this is not real. Because especially in the young generations, I see that we have seen the changes that Instagram and social medias have had in the last years. But these people are born, in a way, with social medias. So we still have a perception of, this is daily life, but it's still virtual. It's still like, it has consequences on real life, but it's still something else. But some people, they cannot feel this difference, because whatever they do is on social medias. Whatever other people do or whatever they think that other people do is on social medias. Any kind of reference is on social media. So I think that the awareness that what is on social media can be false is not to be taken granted.
Yeah.
Because imagine you are 13 years old and you are your body is growing and you're starting to develop your own character, your own style, your own beliefs, and you see only fake images which you don't really recognize as fake. So you just see it as something normal, and then you start to realize that you are never going to be able to be the same. And then you ask yourself, but why? So they don't have this awareness themselves. It's, of course, it's not their fault. They're grown with that. They saw it from the very beginning. That now I saw at the other day at the shopping mall, two girls that maybe were, I don't know, 10 years old, using their smartphones and with makeup, taking selfies and so on. So it was like, wow, this is getting very, very heavy in a way. So I'm really glad. And I'm not, of course, a big fan of retouch on pictures. I use editing basically in a way that is obvious, retouched, and it's more like a feeling that I want to give to some pictures or this kind of thing, but it's obviously fake. So people can recognize it as, I don't know, as people see in a black and white picture, they know it's not real, you know?
Yeah.
Real life is not in black and white. So more or less I do the same thing, but it's of course really, really different from retouching. I don't know, I have the t-shirt that is showing like a spot of sauce from pasta and I need to take it off. It's not the same, and all my lips are not perfect in this picture. I need to retouch them. So I'm really, really, really glad about this law. And I think I kind of expected it from Norway. And Norway is really, really good in doing these things. And that's also one of the reasons why I moved here. I think I have more possibilities, even though my work is online. Of course, I want to do something in real life as well. And I think Norway is a good place where to do it. So this law just confirmed, okay, I'm in the right place.
Civil society in Norway is really strong, much stronger than in many other countries. I think another place where you could compare the strength of civil society is New Zealand. I think there are many similarities between Norway and New Zealand in the way society is inclusive and accepting as well. And I also think, like, I am very glad to see that there is this, actually the government taking into consideration the real life impacts. And I would also like to see in the future, maybe also starting to take into consideration the algorithms and what algorithms actively do to people. Because you brought up the example of the 10 years old taking selfies and putting on makeup and all that. And we can kind of, we're making an assumption here, but we can assume that what they see on their Instagram is basically just like people having heavy makeup, people having perfect bodies, people that actually do this as a job that are paid for, but they are exposed to more of that and more of that, because once you start, once you like something, once you save something, if you see a video, the algorithm automatically expands it and it brings you more of the same. But more of the same also means radicalization. Mm-hmm. So here you see, you become more invested into makeup, you become more invested into your beauty standard, and your entire perceive of life becomes this that you see online. And of course, when you are 13, 14, this has big damages. And of course, there is a reason why Instagram is not allowed for people below 14, but I know plenty of children that use their parents' profiles. So there are so many ways to like go around this. Like, yeah, of course, I also used Facebook when I was not allowed of age and nobody actually checked me because back then Facebook was like less strict than now. So yeah. And but I actually also wanted to raise a flag to Chiara Ferragni in this thing, because like if we look at in the history of social medias, she was basically the first one to be to invent the profession of influencer. But she has been very clear from the start, this is a job. This is not like I have a dream life. This is my job. Like every time you see me going out to a restaurant, having clothes, these things that I do, it is my job. I am paid for this. And she has been extremely clear about this. Yeah. So that is like, it's a good thing from her. She has never like sold it to somebody as like, oh, you can have it too. This is my job. It's my profession. Like, as you are a doctor, you are a student, you are a nurse. I am this. I am an influencer. I get plenty of money for this. I can teach you how to do it. She teaches courses at university into this. But she has been clear. This is my job. So that's a good thing from her, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think we can have one last, our last classic question, final question. Would you like to recommend to our listeners a book or a film on the topic, both on the topic of mental health and social media?
Yeah, absolutely. As it concerns social medias, I'm not sure about that. But I have a movie and a book. Actually, it was of course written the book first, and then they made a movie out of it. It's actually an Italian book, and it's called The Solitude of Prime Numbers. It's a novel by Paolo Giordano, in Italian La Solitudine dei Numeri Primi. And it is a very, very interesting and moving story about a girl suffering from anorexia and a boy who is a cutter. So it talks about how these two people are understanding each other, but still not understanding completely each other, and how difficult it is to show your mental issues, but at the same time, you know that there's somebody else feeling the same around there. It's not that uncommon. So yeah. I really recommend this book and also movie. It was basically one of my first inspiration. When I read this book, I was really surprised that somebody was actually talking about this, because I was looking for movies and references about this topic, but it was really difficult to find. And then an Italian book talking about this, I was really impressed. Yeah. It had a big impact on people. I remember it was quite shocking at the time it was published, because the topic was difficult, but yeah. It's really intense and also really delicate, and also really everybody can read it. You don't need to have experience
to understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it can help also people who are a bit skeptical about this, who don't really understand why people is doing this, to try to understand a little bit more and to try to relate to people having different experiences. So
yeah,
that's my recommendation.
I actually remember when the book and the film came out in Italy, and I remember there was a lot of talk about it everywhere, and it was probably the first time that Italians actually were put face to face with like mental health issues. I remember like really it was everywhere on TV. The author was everywhere on TV talking about it for some months.
Yeah, it was great.
One of the few moments where Italy actually was like, oh, look at that. Something is happening in civil society in this country. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was amazing. I remember I was really, really shocked in a positive way. Absolutely. Yeah.
I can also recommend a documentary. It's actually a Netflix documentary. It's called The Social Dilemma. It came out in 2020, and I think probably everybody has seen it by now, but it is tech experts talking about the real life impact on what happens online. I think it's really, really interesting, and it should be mandatory to see for everybody that is using social medias.
That one is actually really interesting because you have the developers of the algorithms themselves talking about the monster they created and that kind of got out of hand. So yeah, I would definitely also recommend that. Really, it's been such a fruitful conversation, and having you here has been an honor. Thank you so much, Agata.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining.
Thank you for tuning in another episode of the Activism Academy podcast with your hosts, Hella Grishi, and me, Miriam Fanin. In this episode, we discussed the real-life risks and repercussions on what gets posted online and how it can affect the life of people. So be mindful, whatever you post online, be mindful what you share, and most importantly, remember to speak yourself and tell your stories. Thank you, Agata, for joining us for this episode. And of course, if you're interested to learn more about her and her work, you can visit her Instagram profile at solitudeskinniescars.